Welcome to the Education Gadfly Show. This is your host, Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Foundation, here with my guest co-host, also from Fordham, Mr. Liam Julian. Liam, welcome.
Mike, it's a pleasure and an honor to be here.
Well, very good. Well, listeners, you guessed right. Our usual co-host, Rick Hess, is out of town this week, on a junket, I believe. So, Liam, the pressure is on, since, frankly, Rick typically carries a show. Are you ready to be entertaining, and is that Rick's gold chain you're wearing?
Well, Mike, you may not know this, but Rick is actually one of my idols, and I really tried to get into Rick Hess mode this morning. I substituted Rolling Rock for milk in my Cheerios, and I purchased this gold chain from a very nice vendor out on K Street, and I think I'm ready to go.
Okay, well, very good. Well, sure looks like it. Well, let me explain how the show works. First of all, the podcast is inspired by the Education Gadfly, which is the Fordham Foundation's weekly take on education news and views. You can read it at edexcellence.net. Now, we're going to start today with a game of Pardon the Gadfly, where Liam and I will debate one another on the hot education topics of the week. Now, some of you might think, wait a minute, you're both from the same organization. How will you have anything to debate? But you know, Liam, Fordham is not monolithic.
Mike, that you couldn't be more right about that. In fact, the original Education Gadfly, Checker Finn, even wrote us a letter to the editor last week when he disagreed with something that we had written.
That's right. But you know, Liam, if we're going to be disagreeable, you have to disagree with me on some things there. So, yes. Okay, good. All right. Well, indeed. And you know, Liam and I do have divergent views. Liam is one of those wacky libertarian types, while I, after 10 years in the nation's capital, have come to the enlightened view that, you know, Washington knows best.
Well, that's the view that they promulgate over in the Department of Education.
That's right. That's very right. Okay. Then after we play Pardon the Gadfly, we've got a short interview with a school reformer from Arizona, and then we're going to hear from Education News of the Weird. All this in 15 minutes. All right. Enough chit-chat, Liam. Are you ready to play Pardon the Gadfly? What's the first topic?
Topic number one. Congress recently created a new initiative called Academic Competitiveness Grants, whereby low-income college students can supersize their Pell Grants if they take a rigorous core curriculum in high school. Here's the catch. It's up to the states to define what rigorous means. Mike, are we heading toward another race to the bottom?
Ooh, I like the use of that term. Well, I do worry that we're heading towards another race to the bottom. I mean, we see this race under the No Child Left Behind Act right now, where we worry that states are lowering their standards and making their accountability systems easier, shielding schools from tough accountability, all because they feel this pressure from local districts, you know, to keep the spotlight off their schools. This initiative has a lot of potential. You know, we know that students who take rigorous courses in high school go on at much higher rates to succeed and complete higher education. So Congress is right to create this incentive, but they leave it up to the states to define what rigor is.
Yeah, you know, Mike, and I agree with you that, you know, many times the states aren't living up to the expectations of No Child Left Behind and an initiative such as this. But what I would say is that Congress really doesn't have a choice in this matter. I guess I would disagree with you a little bit about the solutions that you're proposing. I think that, you know, the states, they really have to be the ones to set the criteria for these sorts of things. Otherwise, nobody's going to get on board.
Well, you know what, Liam, but that's not right. I mean, look, what we should do is we should set these kinds of standards at the national level. Just like under No Child Left Behind, we should have national standards for academics, we should have a national test, and then we should leave everything else to the states and local school districts. That's a federal role that would actually make a lot of sense. I mean, it's the focus on results and measurement at the national level and then get out of everything else.
Yeah, but, you know, I worry that that's going to get even more carried away. I mean, because before, you know, with No Child Left Behind, we didn't have national standards and national tests. It was going to be left up to the states. Now we're changing that. I mean, where's the cycle end? I mean, how much micromanagement is Washington going to do of these states' affairs? I'm sure that's what people in the states are thinking. And I worry also that No Child Left Behind runs the risk of losing a lot of support with these sorts of national standards and national tests.
But, you know, when it comes to these academic competitiveness grants, actually, state officials say, don't give us any flexibility because we'll mess it up. Okay. Hey, you know, not too bad, Liam. You know, unlike Rick, you actually debated the issue. Quite novel. You know, I always know when Rick is stumped when he starts to make up crazy stories and tell ridiculous jokes. Okay. Well, topic number two, divide and conquer in Omaha. The state of Nebraska recently decided to divide up the city of Omaha into three school districts, largely along racial lines. Liam, is this separate and unequal or something else?
Well, you know, I'm a bit confused by this. I think a lot of people are. Omaha has been, you know, since 1999, they've stopped busing. And so their schools have been relatively segregated since then. But what this does is it essentially codifies that segregation by making three districts, one which will be predominantly white, one which will be predominantly black, and one which will be predominantly Hispanic. And the people that are pushing this have said, you know, we're not trying to be segregationists. This is just the best for our students. But the reasons behind it is that people are actually saying, well, hey, if we have Hispanics running Hispanic schools or blacks running black schools or whites running white schools, they'll essentially do better by those kids. And I don't know that that's the case. I think that's a troubling idea.
Well, it certainly doesn't feel right. But what's interesting is that the state has one black legislator, and he is in favor of this plan. And to some degree, you can understand why. In any big city like Omaha, where we've got some economic diversity within the city, what happens over time is that money and resources and qualified teachers start to move to the more affluent side of town. You know, and this happens because under a lot of the union contracts, teachers have first dibs on open jobs in the district. And so they go to where the working conditions are a little bit easier, which tends to be in the affluent side of town. They end up making more money as they get more and more years of experience. So we have one school in the affluent side of town where all the teachers are making at the top of the pay scale. And we have these other schools in the poor side of town where we've got all rookie teachers. And as a result, we're really spending way more money to educate the rich kids than the poor kids. So, you know, if you're able to divide up this district and really divide up the money equally, it might be a net gain for those poor schools, for those poor black and Hispanic schools.
But Mike, isn't it troubling that we have come to the point in education where we say the only way that we're going to give these kids an equal opportunity education is by dividing districts essentially by race?
Sure. I mean, this really does feel strange, you know, but the problem is we haven't been able to have success with the other kinds of things that we need to do. Okay. Whew, that buzzer is tough. All right, Liam, what's our final topic?
Final topic. New York City Schools Chancellor Joel Klein announced this week that he's going to grade each of his schools based on test score gains, and he's going to fire principals that aren't getting the job done. Furthermore, he's going to provide bonuses to schools that are making lots of progress. Mike, what's not to love here?
Well, you know, it looks good on the surface, Liam, but if I'm a principal, I've got some serious questions. First of all, you're going to say that you're going to fire me if I don't get the job done and boost test scores, right? And then if I do a really good job, my school is going to get extra cash. But am I going to get that cash? I mean, if you're going to hold me accountable, I'd like to see a bonus. Furthermore, you're giving me all this accountability, but I've got no authority. I mean, I can't fire the teachers in my schools if they're not doing a good job. I can't even decide who's going to teach in my school. Central office just sends me something, somebody, and I got to accept them. You know, so I really feel like, you know, if I'm a principal, you know, I'm really under a lot of pressure here, but I don't have a lot of resources to make decisions.
That's definitely right. I mean, you're right to call for more autonomy if there's going to be more accountability. But as far as the bonuses, you know, obviously I think that these principals ought to get bonuses when they're doing a good job. But I think Klein could make the point that, hey, look, this isn't industry. This isn't GE. Okay. You're working for these kids. And, what you really need to do here is keep that in the back of your mind. I mean, you know, if your school is doing well and getting more money for it, that should be reward enough in itself. I mean, actually, principals get compensated pretty well as it is, don't they?
Well, I mean, now, come on, Liam. This is, I mean, the basic idea here in any industry, in any line of work, is that people should be compensated based on the performance, right? This is why you get paid such a low salary here at Fordham. Okay. So, look, if you keep doing a good job in this podcast, we might give you an extra $5 this month, you know, maybe even let you buy, some Starbucks on the foundation. Okay.
Well, yeah, I mean, it would be nice to go out to a movie every once in a while, but, you know, interestingly enough, I mean, I think this is a good idea overall. We had principals come into the office last week from the UK, and they have a similar system set up over there, and they say that it's really one of the things that keeps them on track. I mean, they have almost like auditors come into their schools, and they, you know, will look at what's going on in the classroom and interview the principals, and when those principals aren't doing well, you know, they're held accountable for it.
All right. You know, does that buzzer sound like Fran Dresser?
Yeah. A little bit.
Okay, very interesting. All right, well, Liam, very well, good job. That's it for Pardon the Gadfly this week. Now it's time for our interview. Our guest is Matt Ladner. He's a senior fellow at the Goldwater Institute and vice president at the Alliance for School Choice. He wrote an editorial this week for the Education Gadfly about school reform in Arizona. I had a chance to talk with him by phone. Let's take a listen. Hi, Matt. Thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure.
So, Matt, you have an editorial in the Education Gadfly this week that looks at education reform in Arizona. Specifically, you're wondering why, in a state that's had lots of charter schools and competition for over a decade now, test scores haven't risen. Now, some would argue that it's because choice is not enough to improve student achievement, but what's your explanation?
My explanation is that while we do have a good deal of school choice here in Arizona, that we don't have nearly as much as is often recognized. We're ranked number one in school choice by the Manhattan Institute, but we're grading on a curve. And since, you know, Arizona has the most liberal charter school law in the country, and there are 500 charter schools in the state, but the net impact of those 500 charter schools has been to absorb about one-third of the increase in the public school population. So the amount of competitive pressure being put on normal public schools is actually limited, and we need to do more.
So Arizona obviously has a huge influx of population from the rest of the United States, also immigration, obviously. So you're saying that it really mutes the impact of these choices. So why don't lawmakers push to open a lot more charter schools?
Well, the lawmakers, the legislature here is very supportive of expanding school choice, especially private school choice on the tax credit side and school voucher measures. The governor is not as supportive, and sort of through the authorizing process, I think there are some problems there, and then slowing down the number of charter schools as well.
All right. So if more charter schools are not on the horizon, what's the solution to Arizona's woes?
I think the solution is we need to bring private schools into the mix, make private schools much more accessible than they are now financially to low-income parents.
Okay. Now, you also say in your editorial you have an idea about how excellent teachers should be encouraged to teach larger classes, and this could help absorb some of the additional student population. Bigger classes, that's an interesting idea. Tell us about that.
Well, there's very interesting research by William Sanders and others showing that teacher quality has a huge impact on student achievement and that average class size does not. And, this research shows that there are some teachers that are really rock stars that add a lot of value to kids' learning. And those teachers are underpaid, in my opinion, and need to be paid a lot more. But in addition, we need to give children more access to these teachers. The natural, where this research winds up taking you is to a place where parents ought to have access to data about teacher achievement on a value-added basis, so it's fair. They ought to have choice about who teaches their child, not just, I believe, choice about what school educates their child, but also about what teacher. And teachers that do a good job and are attractive to parents ought to be paid a lot more. And those teachers who we identify as not, getting results and not adding value to children's education ought to be, perhaps doing something else professionally.
Okay. Well, very interesting. Well, I can't imagine that our friends at the NEA and AFT are jumping up and down in support with those ideas right now. School choice, teacher choice, merit pay, and larger class sizes. You hit them all, Matt, I think.
Yeah. The thing is that I'm sitting here in a state where 48% of the fourth graders, according to the NAEP, can't read, and we're spending between $8,000 and $8,500 a year per kid to do that. And
that's right.
I'm not responsible for that, but the NEA does bear some responsibility for it.
That's right. Okay, Matt. Well, we have one last question for you. Here on the Education Gadfly Show, we like to ask the tough questions. And in light of all the recent controversy over illegal immigration and how that impacts this part of the debate, I've got to ask you, Matt, are you employing any undocumented workers right now or domestic help on your household staff?
No, not unless you count me mowing the grass.
Okay, very good. All right, Matt. Well, thanks again for playing along and for joining us today. And we'll hope to catch you again soon.
Great. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Well, what do you think, Liam? Would you have liked to choose your teachers when you were in high school?
Yeah, I mean, there are a few teachers in high school that I could have done without, but I bet if they were here, they would say that they probably could have done without me as well.
Yes, I think that's certainly true. Okay, well, it's time for everybody's favorite education news of the weird. This week, with our very special correspondent, Jennifer Leischer. Jen, what's weird this week?
Well, guys, this week's news of the weird comes to us from across the pond. It seems that UK teachers think that, rather than making their lessons more interesting, the key to student success is to be as boring as possible. Aptly named math instructor Zoe Fail told an audience at a recent conference of the Association of Teachers and Lecturers that children are not bored enough. Barry Williams, a lecturer, believes that when his students yawn during class, they're simply missing the nuances and subtleties of his teachings. Boredom is good. Of course, this inaction bug has lately been wafting around the continent, but Gadfly's a little distressed to see it land in the UK. What do you think, guys?
Well, you know, Jen and Mike, I think that obviously this is a problem. I mean, you know, it's okay in places like France where they protest to stay bored and inactive. And, you know, even in Italy where their presidential election is just kind of recently turned out, but the guy who lost refuses to lose and everybody seems kind of okay with that. But in the UK, that's just not what they do. I mean, they're, you know, they started the Industrial Revolution. They make things. They have factories and smokestacks, not beautiful beaches. And if kids in UK classes aren't, you know, entertained, they're going to look out of the window and see the awful countryside that surrounds them, and it's just going to be a complete disaster. So, well, what do you think, Mike?
Well, frankly, I'm bored with the whole discussion. So, all right. Wow, boring. I would say, though, you know, if I had been told when I was a student teacher, you know, back in ed school that I could be boring, that would have saved me a lot of trouble. You know, I was so trying to be innovative and entertaining all the time. I could have just droned on up there. That would have made my life a lot easier.
Well, that's kind of what you do around here.
That's right. Well, exactly right. Because it's good to be the boss, Liam. It's good to be the boss. Well, Jennifer, thanks for joining us. I hope you'll come back another time. And that is all the time we have for this week. Liam, Jen, once again, thank you. Rick Hess, if you're listening out there, you're fired. Just kidding. You'll be welcome back here too, Rick. Thanks everyone out there listening for joining us. And don't forget to read the original Education Gadfly at www.edexcellence.net or send us your thoughts at letters@edexcellence.net. Till next week, I'm Mike Petrilli.
I'm Liam Julian.
Both of the Thomas B. Fordham Foundation, signing off.